Welcome to the Guy James Show. Whether you're here, there, or anywhere, welcome to the show today. We're glad to have you along. Streaming the show to you live today from beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. And it is a lovely day. I hope it's nice where you are as well. We've had a little bit of cool weather here lately, but it's going to turn hot again tomorrow, about 88 or something tomorrow. So back to the warm weather tomorrow, but... You know, to tell you the truth, I've barely been outside of the studio today, so I guess what does the weather matter to me today? Not a whole lot, but I know it's turning north, or up north it's turning nice. People are starting to think about planting their gardens and so forth in certain areas, and so good luck to you on. I kind of miss that. People don't have gardens here in Florida. They really don't. I guess it's just... all the pests, the ants, and it would be very, very difficult. I can say that. It would be very difficult. So, anyway, one thing I do miss, and as you know, I've mentioned before, just mentioned the other day, about the tomatoes, Burger King and all that, trying to chisel the workers on their tomatoes, picking them over in Immokalee here. You just can't get a good tomato in Florida. You just can't get a really good one. It takes that good old northern-style dirt from about Tennessee on up to grow a good, nice, juicy tomato with lots of flavor in it. You just can't get it around here. Anyway, welcome to the program. Very glad to have you along with us today. I hope you'll join us. It is a talk show, not just me, but for you to talk as well. We'd like to hear your opinion on anything we have to say, and maybe your opinion on anything you have to say. At 866-546-5254, it's a toll-free call. That's right, a toll-free call. I know everybody at the Head On Radio Network chat room knows that, and the people at iTunes, you should know that. And wherever you may be linking to the show, it's a toll-free call, 866-546-5254. If you have minutes to spare on your calling plan, 941-876-6896. All right. Big news. The Pope is here. What's his name? I can never remember. Benedict the 4th or 14th? I'm not sure. Big deal. Don't stone me for that. I say big deal because other than PR for the Catholic Church, what good is this visit? Really. I'm not Catholic. But I have always thought, not just now, but from the very beginning, if a Pope really wants to have an impact on goodness and mercy in this world, he would use his lofty position to lobby for peace in the Middle East. He'd go before the cameras and tell the world that George Jr. Bush needs to take American troops away from places they don't belong and stop the killing. But he hasn't done that. He just hasn't done it. The Pope doesn't want to risk it. And my question is, would the man he represents, the Pope, would the man the Pope represents have risked it? Would those who founded Christianity have risked it? And I think we all know the answer to that. So if the Pope really is the vicar of Christ, why doesn't he emulate those that he represents and stand tall for justice and mercy in this world? Now, go ahead and flame me if you want to, but that's how I feel. I don't think he does nearly enough. Rather than just being a figurehead, he ought to be out there speaking out all over the world for justice and mercy and for peace. And I don't think the Pope does near enough of that, and I think they went way too far on this whole deal yesterday. I mean, I've never gotten it. I have never gotten it. Don't think I ever will. I'm Protestant, and I don't have anything against the Catholic Church. Of course I don't. Don't have anything against the Pope. But I just think having the lofty position he's got, he ought to use it. He's got that bully pulpit and not-so-bully pulpit, too, and he just ought to work real hard for peace in the world. And I just don't see him doing it. He ought to publicly go right on TV, have a big old press conference while he's in Washington, and said, I want George Bush to stop this war. That's what he ought to do. But you know what? He doesn't listen to me. He doesn't listen to me at all. Doesn't know I exist. So anyway, that's my opinion about the Pope coming down. Oh my God, what a bunch of falder all over that deal. Bushy boy went out to the airport to meet him. And then he drove the Pope a mobile. I think we need Father Guido Sarducci on here to comment. I was trying to get Father Guido Sarducci on the phone today, and he would be the one to comment on this whole thing. I noticed the Pope a mobile. He was riding through town, and he went up in front of drove in the semicircle around the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. If you're ever in Washington, D.C., be sure and go and see that. It is a stunning building inside. The mosaics in it are just incredible. They really are. It's completely different than the National Cathedral. Completely different. Of course, the National Cathedral is Gothic, and the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception is not. So they're very spectacular in their own right, in both their ways. I love the Gothic architecture of the National Cathedral, and I do love the beautiful mosaics inside of the Catholic Shrine. It's a spectacular building. If you ever go to Washington, don't miss out on seeing that. You really need to. Just you don't have to be Catholic. You don't, you know, just go and enjoy the architecture and the stunning design inside and the beautiful huge mosaics. They will have an effect on you one way or another. I love that sort of thing. It's always been my desire to go to Paris, not so much to see Paris, but I would enjoy seeing the Île-de-France area with all the great cathedral. Fine arts is one of my things in college, and I would enjoy seeing the Île-de-France area with all the great cathedrals and so forth. And oddly enough, a lot of people think Notre Dame is one of the great cathedrals of the world, and it's a nice one and all, but it does not compare to Chartres and Amiens and Reims and all of those. Oh, well, I'll get off of that. How many of you watched the debate last night? No, I hear the snoozing from here. what a time. I hope that many of you, those of you that were bored to tears by it as I was, I hope you called ABC. I did. Called every one of their lines that were posted today to protest the outrageous moderation of the shows. The debate last night. I thought it was just absolutely pathetic. And what's his first name? Charles Gibson? And George Stephanopoulos? Oh, my God. I read the Philadelphia Inquirer today to see what the remarks from Pennsylvania would be about it. And 84%. Of the people polled, and the last I looked, they had nearly 5,000 votes on it. 84% of them said it was either a waste of time or disappointing. And it was because of their... Oh, the moderators. First of all, one of the most important things to me in my life is loyalty. If you've got a friend and, you know, you've treated them right, and loyalty is important to me. Very, very, very important. I'm involved with a friend or a politician or something, I stay loyal until somebody sticks a knife in my back. But loyalty is important to me. And George Stephanopoulos, he's a Judas if there ever was one. Benefited greatly from the Clintons and then turns around and sticks a knife in their back, but I don't appreciate that at all. But anyway, against my better judgment, I watched the debate last night and once again was utterly appalled at the performance of the so-called journalist involved. And you had to wonder what Gibson and Stephanopoulos were thinking. Especially when you consider they planned these questions and their video questions from the public ahead of time. What were they thinking? Almost all of their questions were completely asinine and just absolutely pointless. It was nothing, almost nothing, but personality gotchas and smart-ass remarks from a pair of guys who are supposedly intelligent journalists. And it got the point where I expected one of them to ask Obama if his kids were eating right or if they did their homework on time. It was just absurd. And after a while, it became quite apparent that Obama was frustrated with the line of questioning, and he handed it right back to him by saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, that this isn't what the public wants to hear. But that didn't deter the... Laurel and Hardy pair doing the question. They just kept it going. And I just was mortified by the whole thing. It was let's jump on Obama night last night. And I think, contrary to what I've read from many people, I think Barack Obama handled it very well. I think I would have blown my top. How many times are we going to go over Reverend Wright? How many times? How many times are you going to bring up this Weather Underground thing? You know, I do. I think Barack Obama handled it very well, although you could tell Barack Obama has a little bit of... you can see contempt in his eyes when he has it for somebody. He lifts that chin up in the air a little bit, and you can see it. And I don't blame him. I'm not saying that in an accusatory way, in a negative way. I would have a little disdain for those two clowns myself. And you could tell he was thinking they were guys who were both dumber than hayrakes, and they are compared to him, but he was his usual well-spoken and completely composed self. And I think he got his point across to the viewing public about what a waste of everyone's time their foolish, idiotic questions were. Hillary, on the other hand, seemed to play along with George Stephanopoulos, as she addressed him, and Gibson, and she didn't display any disappointment at their nitpicking questions, but rather played along with them. And on several of the questions, she seemed to want to go at Obama right along with the questioners on matters that don't matter one whit to the thinking public. And frankly, I know I may be in the minority here, but I thought on an intellectual level last night, for the thinking people, I thought Obama made her look bad last night. In fact, very bad. And the reason I say that, her responses to several of the personal attacks against Obama, just to me, And you know, as you know, as I've admitted to you, she is somebody I have supported all along. It just made her look like someone who's desperate last night. She joined in on these attacks. I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say. She was willing to entertain even the slightest personal nuanced question against Obama, and it was in my opinion, a very poor performance by a politician who looked like just that, a politician, a veteran of political wars who's willing to sink the ship in order to keep herself afloat. That's my opinion last night. That's coming from a Clinton supporter, believe me. And as someone who admires and has supported her for a long time, I was appalled. And I have to tell you, my opinion of her has suffered over that last night. I wasn't at all pleased with that performance. I thought it was annoying. Obama was gracious and magnanimous enough to, when they said something about her, and let's say it like it is, lying about the Bosnia thing, and she admitted it again last night, she didn't use the word lying, but when she talked about it, Obama was very gracious, and he was very magnanimous when he looked at everybody and said, well, you know, we're not perfect up here, I've made mistakes, she's made mistakes, and neither of us are perfect. And I thought, you know, that's a perfect answer for him to give. But Hillary, on the other hand, whenever there came a chance to jump in on one of those and beat him over the head with it, she did, and I don't know. Maybe I'm way off guard here, or way off the mark. But I just didn't like it. I did not like it. And I do want to hear your opinion on it. I do want to hear how you felt about it. Like I said, 84% of the people in Philadelphia thought it was a damn poor performance by the moderators, especially the questions were just absurd. What did we find out last night? Anything? Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, hey, it's Sandra. How are you?
Hi.
Listen, I saw and heard that last night, and, you know, I'm appalled. I feel captive by this horrific media. It just irritated me. It's like they've erected this barrier between, you know, what the hell I want to know and these candidates, and I'm so sick to death of it. They're disgusting, they're out of touch, and they're stupid. George Stephanopoulos, what in the world?
Yeah.
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
I remember when he was with the Clintons, he was a pretty boy. I see it's the same deal. He's just a little bit older, but he's hella dumb. What the hell?
Yeah. I just thought his performance, you know, they just insisted on and hacking away last night with those idiotic, you know, the plowed ground, as we'd say on the farm, ground that's already been plowed. We didn't care about that. I wanted to hear something with substance, they gave us nothing.
And the American people, you know, I have my issues about the American people in quotes, but I think people are like, yo, you know, we're sick of this filter. I think people are really getting frustrated with this so-called media that we've been dealt with. You see what I'm saying? It's awful. That was my main thing. I couldn't even get to the candidates because I was so disturbed by these people who seem to be getting in the way of discourse that we desperately need. And Obama you know, this dude towers so high among these people. I can't believe how he held it together. And I'm not like a huge supporter, but I got to give dude credit. I don't know how he does it, because these people look, including Hillary, they look ridiculous around him at this point.
They did, you know, last night.
I mean, yeah, I'm talking about the last night before. I'm like, he held it together, and Hillary, you said she's looking desperate. Yeah, that's one way of putting it. I am looking at her shrinking lead in Pennsylvania, and, like, if she loses that, what's she going to do? Like, how's she going to hang on? I need to know what you think, because I'm thinking she needs to shut it down, or if she loses Pennsylvania, I guess she's going to hang on until June 3rd. Is that the deal, until Puerto Rico?
Yeah, but, you know, even if it ends up just really close in Pennsylvania, I think that would be a sign right there that it's not going to happen for her. And but, you know, Stephanopoulos and Gibson last night, it's as though they decided the top issues facing America are gaffes and flag pins and 60s radicals.
No, the flag pin thing, too, also drove me batty. It's like, I have to sit there and listen to Obama painfully explain to these idiots that, you know, it ain't nothing to do with that symbol. I mean, he was talking so, you know, trying to talk to people like they got 2 cents in their heads, which I appreciate from Obama. That's one thing about him, no matter if I disagree with some of his policies that I like, is that he don't have no problems addressing folks as if they got a couple of cents in their heads. You know what I mean?
Sure. And what are they saying at this point? Oh, you're running for president and you're not a patriot. You don't like the flag. You don't like America. Is that what they're saying? I mean, why would somebody even bring it up? And they chose that particular film clip of one of the voters there in Pennsylvania to ask that question. And I thought, oh, my God.
Well, no, but it's just so absurd between that and that House Negro, Bob Johnson. I'm so sick to death of these sort of bizarre attacks on Obama that have attacked his record. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know, and it's just these surrogates of Hillary. I try to have, I'm kind of torn because, you know, I'd like to see a woman in there just on the strength of that would be so radically different. You see what I mean?
Sure.
But she's just, it's like, the power thing is doing her in. She can't seem to separate. It's like, she seems to just have no problem scuttling our whole party if need be. I'm not too sure what her plan is.
I'm not sure either at this point. I think they're running a very, very poor campaign. it's almost as though she had Al Gore and John Kerry's battle plan. I mean, we seem to have terrible strategies in elections lately. I have to give the Republicans credit. They know how to win elections here lately. But
the only person who's benefiting from this is Mr. Morton, John McCain, sorry.
Yeah.
Mr. Morton, you know, the salt guy. That's what he reminds me of.
Yeah.
And I just am like, but I think I have to hope that once a nominee is chosen, that gap will disappear, because people can't really want McCain, or am I out of touch?
No, they can't. They can't. They can't. I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose my mind if that happens. Oh, he already has. But I don't think I'd be able to stand it.
Oh, no, listen, I don't know. I've been sort of putting out feelers. I got some friends in England. You know, I got my passport. I'm sorry. I would really have to consider a flight. Something. I don't know what. You know, you can't leave home, but I swear, McCain, that would just be an unmitigated disaster for us.
It certainly would, if they want a true McBush, they want a third term, go for it. I mean, I can't think of any time in modern history where it would just be more the same, guaranteed, absolutely guaranteed.
Oh, and I think they would have to throw in a draft, wouldn't they, if they want to continue these wars without end, right?
If they're going to continue their policy of wanting to protect all of us, being our protectors, yes, they would have to. They cannot do this on a volunteer army. They cannot maintain it. There's no doubt.
Well, let me ask you something else. It's a little different subject, but I'm just curious. So the Supreme Court said, yeah, let's start killing folks again.
Yeah, and the Kentucky rule, right, yesterday?
Yeah, I was just like, you know, where am I living? What's happening? I'm like, are you kidding me? Everyone's trying to go the other way with capital punishment, and these pigs decide, oh, no, we need to start executing people right away.
After the story we read from Texas yesterday, where they've now discovered that 14 people have been set free in the recent history here because of DNA evidence proving them innocent.
No, and how many people, you know, me, of course I have to go the glass half empty. How many poor people was executed? That's my question.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Anybody that's got those rose-colored glasses on that thinks we haven't executed a whole bunch of people that weren't guilty, they would be absolutely wrong. How many people have been railroaded into prison?
And sleeping lawyers, I mean, it just goes on and on. The justice system, you know, does not serve you well if you're poor.
That would be one of the worst words you could ever hear in your life if you'd gotten arrested for something, to hear those words, public defender.
Oh, no. You know, I mean, people don't even realize that they didn't even allow for access to lawyers until 1963. So it's not really, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It's so broken, but... to think that the Supreme Court, they're so disturbing. I mean, I hate to say that I hate them, but I'm starting to, because they keep ruling against people. Now they want to let corporations off from being sued. Have you heard that one?
Oh, sure.
Down the pipe.
Sure. They'll have complete immunity over everything, not just telecom things, but everything.
That was the thing, yeah. And it's just sort of, so McCain would... you know, because then people can't hold on forever. Well, we got Stevens and Ginsburg. They're all hella old, right?
Yeah. The next president's going to have a profound effect on it. Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, that's my thing. I keep holding on and telling, you know, my acquaintance and friends that, you know, you got to think about your kids and what's pending on that court. And just hold your nose and vote. Because even Hillary will, at least I'm sure she wouldn't. I don't know what kind of judges they would appoint.
Our esteemed attorney general here in Florida yesterday, today actually, Bill McCollum, and our governor Charlie Crist, I heard them commenting on this Supreme Court ruling yesterday about that Kentucky case, and especially the attorney general here in the state, he seems rather anxious to get the chemicals out.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and that whole thing is so disturbing because it's like. There, I read the thing, and they deliver these so-called drugs from, like, a five-foot tubing, and it looks like there's so many things that can go wrong, and I don't know, you know, I just find it so disturbing.
Well, not to be crass here, but you know they won't allow them to ship any prescription drugs to us from Canada or any place else. I wonder about those. I wonder if those are American made. I have to find that out. Oh, geez.
Oh God.
Yeah, and that's a calloused remark. But yeah, it's their attorney generals all over the country rubbing their hands together today, saying, "Oh boy!" Especially in Texas, you know, they've had this little. I don't know if Texas has had a moratorium on the death penalty or not. I think just about everybody has.
Well, California, you know, they had one, and so because they got a lot of people on death row here,
and they still use the gas chamber, don't they?
No,
they got rid of it.
No, the last person was that Cookie, whatever his name was, Williams, that gay guy. Yeah, they botched his death up. Hello?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that one. Yeah.
He was the last one in California, but I don't know if they're just going to, I find it, maybe I'm wrong, but I just see them, okay, great, so now they're going to start killing people again. What do you think?
Oh yeah, they will. What was the name of that? I'm so bad at remembering movies. I'll think of it. What was that movie that had the Soylent Green thing in it? We're down to that point that's what we think of humanity. I mean, and I'm not saying, hey, don't get me wrong, everybody here. I'm not one of those ones that says some of these horrible, horrible, horrible criminals don't deserve to rot in prison for the rest of their lives, because I think so. But I also think that there are... well, Texas is a classic example. George Bush is a classic example. Just seemed to love the death penalty process. So you just couldn't get enough of it in Texas.
Well, I'm thinking that they must have had a box. I'm sorry to be crude, but they must have had a box of tissue in that basement when they were talking about that torture. These people are really sick.
Oh.
I think there's something wrong with them. I think they have some sort of, erotic sort of thoughts about their power, you know. I do. I think Dick Cheney is a right weirdo.
Well, and we find out about Condoleezza Rice saying, hey, it's your baby, go for it. Who says that?
She's a freak, too.
Yeah.
Oh, no. No. Listen, you know, there's all kinds of stories about that woman. She's a right case.
But, yeah, I think so.
All these people are just really creepy with their death fetishes, you know?
Well, it just goes to show you they're not... When you get into that situation, especially in this Bush administration, these ultra-right conservative neocons, they're not normal people. They're just not. I have long said that there's something seriously wrong with your psyche if you belong in that category and you take your Wolfowitzes and your Pearls and your Feiths and Rices and Cheneys and all. There's something wrong there. There is, and we can't identify with it. We can't.
No, and I don't ever want to. I don't want to be identifying with it. But more importantly, I can't believe we have to live in a country where it's never addressed. Now that they can just go ahead and do that, and no, it's not on the front page. It's not being dealt with in any fashion, from what I can tell.
Absolutely amazing that story about the torture has just been ignored by the press.
And I'm just like, you know, I feel like I'm living in some sort of horrible science fiction book, you know, like The Handmaiden Tale or 1984 or some, you know, Brave New World or some weird.
Oh, well, you're right. And you look at that whole picture there about these tortures. We've now got confirmation that the President of the United States gave the okay to torture. I mean, where's the media? Where's the Democrats? It was the biggest news the last week, and nobody covered it.
You even had a major network break the damn story, you know, ABC.
Yeah.
And it's just left to lay.
Ashcroft and Tenet and Colin Powell and Rumsfeld, they're all down there discussing this whole thing. And Bush admits it. And we've, the press is out to lunch. I'm fascinated by that. I really am. And sickened.
Talking about bitter.
Yeah.
And whatever comments Obama might be making for the week. I mean, because, you know, I thought, when I heard that torture story, I'm thinking, oh, damn, snap, here we go. I'm waiting. Nothing ever happened.
No. Well, we've, admit it. You feel the same as I do. There have been several times in the last few years you felt that way, right?
Oh, yes.
And what has happened so far? We've got Scooter Libby convicted of a crime and pardoned, or not pardoned and commuted or whatever it was. So that's all. And we've had, what, a good half dozen, maybe more times that we thought, okay, this is it for those guys. And they've never even been in serious trouble. I do see where, who is it they're going to make testify now? Can't remember. Escape me. But somebody's going to have to appear before Congress, and I just can't think of the case in my head right now. But they'll weasel out of it. They've weaseled out of everything so far.
Well, this is not a way to, you know, manage. I don't even want to call it a democracy. I guess it's a representative republic. I don't feel like that anymore. I feel like this is just some kind of corporate wasteland with some fake Bill of Rights, because you know the Constitution won't work if it's not respected. You know what I mean? Because it is just a piece of paper, and as long as it's ignored the way it's been, it's totally changing the makeup of this country.
Representative government is exactly right, and I would like to take a poll amongst thinking people in this country right now and ask them how many of them actually feel represented in Congress. I very few, I should think.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I don't.
Yeah, I don't. I feel, like I say, I feel a total detachment from it. And, you know, I just sort of cling on through, you know, listening to programs like you and other sort of alternative media that I gratefully can find, you know, on the web, and whatever little conversations I can have with other coherent people I know. But outside of that, No, man, I might be might as well be on a different planet.
Yeah, I completely agree. I find myself shaking my head and, you know, doing the old thing now and then.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah, you know, I know I was kind of rambling. I just thought I'd check in because, you know, I got to let you know that at least I'm listening. And I've turned on some other people to you, and so, you know.
Well, thanks so much, and it's always good to hear from you. You and I are in basic agreement on just about everything we talk about here. So
I'm sure it makes for boring radio, but I do appreciate the platform event, and I want you to have a good day.
Thank you. Bye bye. Always good to talk to her. As all my listeners seem to be, very, very, very well informed. Every little thing that comes up, everybody seems to know about it, and that's comforting for me to know. We were talking about that debate last night, and now we'll talk about it some more. The more I think about that debate, really, the more disgusted I get. Weather underground question was just, you know, and Obama said, now I'm responsible for anyone I ever come into contact with. Who the hell wrote these questions? Rush Limbaugh? It's fascinating to me that those guys went over. I don't know. There's got to be a story there somewhere as to why those two clowns would have gone with the questions they did. There's just got to be a story there. If I don't know. I don't want to say conspiracy. I don't want to. But I just can't imagine that two so-called respected journalists, two so-called intelligent men, would have their chance, their moment in the sun on ABC in front of the whole country, in front of the whole world, a chance to talk to probably the next president of the United States and ask him some good probing questions on issues, and they came up with that garbage they had last night? I don't know. I mean, they wasted more than half of the debate, almost a full hour on complete tabloid trivia that really wasn't even interesting. And it is ground that's been covered over and over and over again. You know, okay, ask one question about Reverend Wright or the bitter comment or all that. And they wanted to get something going, but they didn't. And, you know, to ask Obama whether he thought Reverend Wright loved America. And then the suggestion, the insinuation that because Obama doesn't wear a flag pin. And by the way, neither of them had flag pins on either. Just like that idiot congressman from Georgia that was on Matthew's show or one of those shows complaining about Obama not wearing a flag pin that didn't have one on either. These guys didn't have them on either. But they insinuate that you're a congressman, you're a senator, that you don't wear a flag pin in your suit every day, that you're not a patriot. What the hell's wrong with people? It was just, there was a line of questioning that was just repulsive. You would think that Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly and them wrote those questions last night. Do they honestly think that someone who's got a solid record, such as a Barack Obama, from a state of Illinois, who's trying to make history in this country as the first black man to become president, they actually would suggest or insinuate that somehow he's un-American or unpatriotic? That just completely blows my mind. And George Stephanopoulos, I would love to have him here today to ask him a question. He was on with Sean Hannity yesterday. And Hannity had asked him a question, and he said, and George, you said that you were taking notes when Hannity suggested that you ask Obama about his ties with that member of the Weather Underground. And you come right out with it last night. So here we had Sean Hannity, in other words, asking the question last night. And Stephanopoulos was his stooge. And like I mentioned before, that's who George Stephanopoulos is to me anyway, a stooge. The man is a Judas, if there ever was one. And I don't like that in people. I don't like that at all. But anyway, I don't know when I've been more disgusted over. So I went to the ABC website, and by the way, I did call them. I did call them. And I went to ABC's own website, and some of the comments that were up, and I see already that Stephanopoulos is getting defensive about the whole thing. I haven't heard Gibson make any comments, but Stephanopoulos was pretty much going, "What? What? I think our questions were very probing. I think they were very appropriate." Uh-huh. Sure they were, George. But some comments from the ABC site said, and let me quote them, "This is awful. Thank goodness for Jon Stewart and Comedy Central. He does a better job of interviewing and asking relevant questions of his guest in 5 minutes than these two yahoos have in more than an hour. ABC should be ashamed. George should be ashamed. Charlie should be ashamed. This isn't a debate. This is a hit job." Another comment on the ABC site, "Asinine question, abysmal debate. Fire these silly moderators now. They insult the intelligence of the American people." And yet another, I haven't watched ABC News in a few years. I see I haven't been missing much. More than half the debate turned over to Bittergate, Reverend Wright, and the Weathermen, and flag lapel pins. Most of the televised debates I've seen this campaign season have been lame, but this one takes the prize. Either you guys are morons, or you think that we are. Either way, I'm glad to have seen the last of you. Really, really bad. No winners in this debate, but a definite loser. ABC News. And yet another comment. On the ABC site, "This is the worst debate I've ever watched. Never in my life have I been more disenchanted with the news media as a whole, especially a news organization such as ABC that I believe to have some sense of purpose to bring substantive information and perspective to the American people. Americans are tired of the sniping between the candidates and the lack of discussion about what each candidate will do to help the country. ABC News should be ashamed for presenting such a failure of a debate." Well, I wholeheartedly agree. Another one went on to say, "George and Charlie, narcissistic elite journalists trying to score a ratings point, but asking questions that would yield an F in middle school journalism. This debate may be used for years in journalism classes on how not to run a debate. Elmer Fudd would do much better." I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. There just seems to be, within our media, and I do not apologize for attacking our media, because I think it is just it's woeful. It's pathetic. I read foreign journalist stories and see the foreign media, and I think, my God, what has happened to our media in this country? First of all, they don't cover the important issues like they ought to. And secondly, when they do, we end up with some kind of garbage like we had last night. We've got a war going on. We've got a budget crisis. We've got an economy that's in the crapper, and these guys are asking about Reverend Wright last night, who has, I mean, listen, it is good to know how these people personally feel about things, but once they've explained it, let it go. There seems to be no end to the media mediocrity that we have to suffer in this country. We've got the Obama guns, God, and bitterness crap storm, along with crap pouring forth from the same media idiots as usual, the New York Times, the L.A. Times, the Washington Post now, I used to think was a great newspaper, CNN, Fox, Politico, Lou Dobbs, Hardball, Oberman's Comp Countdown, the Daily Coast. All because Obama mentioned something that we've known for a long, long time now. Over this Bittergate thing, and that the U.S. government in many ways has been screwing over the people of the nation's heartland towns. You know, to quote Obama on that, where's that quote? You go into these small towns in Pennsylvania, and like a lot of small towns in the Middle West, in the Midwest, the jobs have been gone now for 25 years and nothing's replaced them, and they fell through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and each successive administration has said that somehow these communities are going to regenerate, and they have not. So what is new about that? Is that a surprise to anyone? And then he went on to say, and it's not surprising that they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them. Or anti-immigrant sentiment, or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. Maybe he didn't say it exactly right, but everybody gets exactly what he meant. You know exactly what he meant. And there was nothing, nothing at all, and this is coming from someone who supported the other candidate. There is nothing at all wrong with what he said. Certainly nothing that's newsworthy. And yet he'd no sooner shut his mouth than the media started ginning this thing up. Oh my God! This guy's got the gall to suggest that there might be some bitterness out there in the lily-white realms of rural American, in the Grange Halls and the Methodist Church, right there in River City. Where the combination of God rhetoric and the Chamber of Commerce boosters have managed to ban the word from public discourse. Even the mention of it can be explosive. Simply because there's so much stuffed inside working folks, inside that lockbox of denial that comes with being a citizen of a culture that's in collapse. And part of the reason it's in collapse is because of our pathetic media. Well, I think it's time we pause for a break. We'll be back in a moment or two. Don't go away.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Oh, don't you feel that way just about every day lately? I certainly did last night. I sat there and watched the debate. And yes, I did try and keep up on American Idol as well. Yes, 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 yes. I try and keep up on that too. Okay? You asked. There you go. I think of myself as a singer-performer, you know, and so I'm interested in that. I am. I see the New York Times today write a story called Clinton Uses Sharp Attacks in Tense Debate. I didn't think it was all that tense in subject matter between the two opponents. It was tense in as much as Obama, I could tell. Couldn't you tell he was getting somewhat frustrated inside? After all, he is an educated man. He's a very intelligent man. He's a very well-spoken man, and he's got a wonderful temperament. He does. I could not take that if I were what went on last night. I just couldn't take it. I'd be... Well, I don't know. Does the American public, if Barack Obama would have looked at Charlie Gibson and Judas Stephanopoulos last night and said something to him that, hey boys, are you kidding me? I mean, he did in a very nice way. I don't think the American people, I don't think this is what they want to hear about. But if he'd looked at him and pounded his fist down on the lectern and said, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? We've got the interest of the United States of America at stake here right now. We've got an election coming up in November to choose the leader of the free world. We've got an economy that's in the toilet. We've got two wars going on, and you guys are asking questions about my minister. What the hell is wrong with you? Now, Obama's way too much of a gentleman to say something like that. I would not be. Would the American public look at my temper and say, oh, my goodness. Oh, he spoke out and he said something bad to the journalist, the poor nice journalist guys. Well, I'd have to say something. I could never control myself like Obama did last night. I just couldn't do it. So my congratulations to him on that. But you know, I thought he was such a gentleman last night. So controlled. Even when, you know, he brought up about Hillary Clinton and the making the statement back in 92 about not wanting to spend her life at home baking cookies. He didn't go after her on that. I wonder, I haven't seen any important poll numbers today. I wonder if he gained anything on her last night. I just don't think her performance was that good last night. I really don't. And I say performance because, let's face it, that's what it was. It's what it is, all these debates. It's a shame that that's what they are. But there's not very much difference between these two people on the issues. Not very much at all. That's why, in the end, I'll be very satisfied with either one of them as president. There's just not a lot of substantive differences between them on the real issues, the issues that affect you and I. I see, what is it, $100 a month? Something like $100 a month for everybody in the United States being spent on the Iraq war, the Iraq occupation, the Bush occupation. How long can we do that? I mean, we are both borrowing money and financing that war, and we are printing money, both of which leads to ultimately a disaster for the people in this country. And yet, we have a man that's willing to keep right on keeping on with it. And I am. I'm fascinated that 28% of Americans, even 28%, as low as his figures are, 28% of Americans, along with most of the media, go right on presuming that Bush and Cheney are not some sort of consequence-damning psychopaths. And, you know, they've got scandal piled upon top of scandal, and it seems that no one important anyway, is willing to speak out on what most of us can see. Bush and Cheney just don't give a damn about public opinion or any expert advice, and believe me, we can ignore this all we want, and these 28% in our media can have their heads in the sand, but there's more to come before this administration is over with. Iran is next, period. And if they can squeeze it in on their way out the door, there will be no consequences for this Bush administration. I mean, we have a Congress that has endured numerous impeachable offenses without even threatening so much as a censure. And they certainly wouldn't bother to hold Bush accountable after he's gone from office. I think we know that. Will this administration attack Iran before they leave? Why not? What's going to stop them? It's become painfully obvious over the past year or two that they'd really like to. And they were really damn close to it until that National Intelligence Estimate leaked out. And that threw some cold water on it for a while, and the White House backed down its rhetoric on the whole thing. They backed off for a little while. But it's amazing to me that after all this time, the Bush administration still enjoys the benefit of the doubt when it comes to their sanity. People believe Saddam was a real threat because this administration was so adamant about it. Everybody thought, well, they wouldn't squander their credibility or incite the public wrath over a mistaken invasion, would they? Well, yeah. And now after we've already seen time and again just how absolutely carelessly manipulative these people are, how callously deceitful that they can be, there are people that still don't believe that they would do it again. And that's exactly why they can. And they will. And they will attack Iran. And they're going to leave it to the next president to handle the aftermath. And anyone who thinks that these people are too election conscious to do it isn't seeing the situation the way it really is. Being thrown into a new, absolutely frightening international conflict during this election, it doesn't help Democrats. Oh, no. It helps McCain. If people are afraid, and that's what they're counting on, if people are afraid and are preemptively, Iran is preemptively attacked, unlike Iraq, Iran is something to be afraid of. And if that happens, people will vote for this war hero in droves. And if nothing else, attacking Iran is a great election strategy for the GOP. Oh, yeah. When the dust settles from the whole thing, and once again, it slowly hits all the Americans that they've been conned again, just like they were so many times before, there'll be the usual hell to pay. A media that's a little bit critical, low approval ratings, and a lecture from Henry Waxman once in a while. But it'll be the Republicans in power yet again planning the next invasion. That's all they've talked about. This fear of crazy, violent Muslims is the tool Republicans win with now. And they can rattle about taxes, but it won't be enough to make up for the terrible failures of this past 7 years. The only issue that they have is terror. And if the nation is tired of Iraq, then it's time for the sequel. It'll be Gulf War III. And, of course, we know John McCain's already got a theme song for Fox to run during this shock and awe part of the new war. Bomb, 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 Iran. And they'll leave office, and it'll be somebody else's problem. That is the plan. That's absolutely the plan. Oh, it gives me a headache. It really does. It just makes you, it does make you want to open up your window and say, I'm not going to take this, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore, when you see this happening to the country you love. When you see this happening to the people you love. When you see this great society of ours heading down the tubes. And for a variety of reasons. But we've sat here for 7.5 years almost and allowed this band of thieves and con men to do untold damage to this country. It just makes you want to bang your head against the wall. It really does. But that's what this show is about. That's what all the political activists are about. Trying to make this country a little better, trying to let everybody know. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. I hope you'll join us in the second hour, 866-546-5254. We'd love to talk to you. I've done quite enough talking today. But join us. If you got something that's on your mind, we'd be glad to hear from you. So we're going to pause for news coming up, and we hope you'll be here when we get back. You're listening to the Guy James Show live here on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney addressed the Building and Construction Trades Department on Tuesday during the organization's legislative conference. Sweeney expressed the necessity of acting now to change the course of jobs and the economy, and not waiting until the election.
What's happening is that our economy, our basic industries, our middle-class way of life, are going to hell in a handbasket. What's not happening is any sort of simply timely, adequate response from Bush.
Admiral Frank Bowman is Chief Executive Officer of the Nuclear Energy Institute, and he brought good news for the building trade workers concerning the future of the nuclear industry. He read a letter from the NEI's Board of Directors.
We support prevailing wages for this skilled workforce and therefore agree with including prevailing wage provisions for new nuclear projects.
Presidential candidates Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were also part of a long list of mostly Democratic legislators who spoke at the event, which celebrated the 100th anniversary of the department. The U.S. retirement crisis is being caused by a shortage of worker political power, not by a lack of corporate cash. Doug Cunningham reports.
American workers are facing a pensions crisis that could plunge them into retirement poverty. Dave Cohen of the United Electrical Workers says just half of U.S. workers have pension plans. Most of those are 401ks that don't provide nearly enough retirement money. Cohen says workers earn good pensions and corporations have more than enough money to pay for them.
The money is there. We look at Exxon Mobil, right? $40 billion profit in a quarter. Corporate America is making lots of money. They don't want to give it to workers.
One answer to the pensions crisis, Cohen says, is to make Social Security a real retirement system that pays 70 to 80% of what workers need to live in retirement. He says applying the Social Security tax to all income over $80,000 could make that happen. But workers will have to use their power to make it happen.
It's always the politician saying it's not possible. I think people believe it is possible, and we have to use our power to make them move in that direction.
Here is today's economic report. 9 out of 12 Federal Reserve districts saw economic growth slow in February. In 10 districts, there were clear signs of weakening of consumer confidence, with declining retail sales. The information comes from the Reserve's Beige Book, which is published 8 times a year by the Federal Reserve Board, and collects anecdotal information on current economic conditions.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation!
This was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go! Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
The one and only. Well, not the one and only. There was a soccer player named Guy James someplace. Believe me, I'm no soccer player, though. Welcome back to the show. Good to have you here for the second hour of the program today. We'll try and keep you informed, entertained, and all that today. It's so good to have each of you with us. And if you'd like to join the program, and we hope you will, I almost said join the problem. I guess it is a problem for some folks. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We've talked about the war today. We've talked about that disaster of a debate there was last night. Our real mission in that war, you know, you have to wonder what it is, really. Of course, there are those who prefer to imagine some sort of a world in which a well-intentioned superpower, that would be us, would fight with all of its might to enable another smaller, distant nation to enjoy the fruits of liberty and democracy and freedom. But it's absolutely nothing short of ridiculous to pretend that Iraqis are capable of controlling that terrible conflict going on in their country, and that a puppet government whose election and operation is entirely under the command of the U.S. military is capable of taking charge and assuming responsibilities. And you can imagine all you want, but we're in Iraq for two reasons, and two reasons only. And those two reasons are energy and Israel. Let's just tell it like it is. And it just drives me crazy when I see John McCain using that line again. Oh, well, never mind, you know, never mind how we got there, never mind, you know. They'd love you to just soak that all in. Well, forget how we got in there. Forget the bad decision, the terrible decision, the lies, the distortion, all of that. Forget that. We're there now. We got to do something. When we had McCain just, what, day before yesterday, he said we can look back at the past and argue about whether we should have gone to war or not, whether we should have invaded or not, and that's a good academic argument. It certainly is. But it is also beyond an academic argument. It's an argument that ought to be on the lips of every American. That old saying, and I butcher it every time, but if you don't pay attention to the past, to history, that you end up repeating it. And isn't that the idea of trying to get better, trying to do a better job, trying to make better decisions, trying to make this country better? We've got to look back at it. We've got to look back at the decision-making that took place at that time. So it's utterly ridiculous for somebody to even assume that. And all you have to do is take a look at the news again today. You have to look at it again today. A suicide bomber struck the funeral of two anti-Al-Qaeda Sunni tribesmen in a town north of Baghdad on Thursday, killing at least 50 people and wounding dozens. It's another one of those areas that General Petraeus said, you know, very quiet. The blast was the latest this week to break a period of relative calm in Sunni areas. And, of course, it's raising concerns that the Sunni insurgents are reorganizing at a time when the U.S. troops and the Iraqi troops are battling Shiite militiamen other places in the country. That's all we need. Reversible, he said. Yes, any gains that they've made are reversible. The bomber, believed to be in his late 50s, was dressed in a traditional Arab robe. And the guards in charge of searching mourners to this funeral allowed him in without a search. And again, at least 50 people were killed and 50 injured in the blast. It's the deadliest attack since March 6, when the bombing in central Baghdad killed 68. Can you imagine if that happened in this country? Our population is what, 15 times, 14 times approximately that of Iraq. So to put that in perspective to our country, that'd be like 750 people getting killed or so. Can you imagine if 750 Americans were killed in a bomb blast someplace? Can you imagine the outrage, the cries of fear and desperation and outrage would be taking place in this country? And how many times has this happened in the nation of Iraq? Can you imagine what those people must be thinking? Can you imagine how they're living? Can you imagine the conditions under which they're living? I can't. I've certainly tried. Of course, the U.S. military made another strike today, and they killed two gunmen. But they also killed six civilians, including a 9-year-old child, which they said damaged several apartments in the residential area. They also killed a journalist. Well, it's not getting any better. And anybody that says it is, according to an amalgamation of all the information that we have now, anybody that says it is just plain wrong. Absolutely wrong. And we can have the Petraeuses and the Crockers all come over here and testify all they want to, but it's not making the situation get any better. And that's to say nothing of, and we've talked about this many times, about the cost of the war. I ran across an article called by an Iraqi woman. Her name is Leia Anwar. And she said, come and see our overflowing morgues and find our little ones for us. You may find them in this corner or the other, a little hand poking out, pointing out at you. Come and search for them in the rubble of your surgical air raids. You may find a little leg or a little head pleading for your attention. Come and see them amassed in the garbage dumps, scavenging morsels of food. Come and see. This is by Leila Anwar. You know, the U.S. military has won every battle it's fought in Iraq. But we've lost this war. Wars are won politically, not militarily. And Bush just simply does not understand this. He still is clinging to the belief that some sort of a political settlement can be imposed through force, and he is mistaken. The use of overwhelming force has done nothing but spread the violence and added to the political instability. And now Iraq, according to so many people who are witnessing that scene, Iraq is ungovernable. Take a look at some of the pictures you'll find on the internet of Baghdad. Not the ones you see on the nightly news here in America. You want to see the truth? Check around the internet and see some of the pictures of Baghdad. Miles of concrete blast walls are snaking throughout Baghdad to separate the warring parties. And the country is fragmented into 100 smaller pieces, every one of them ruled by a local militia commander. These aren't signs of success. They're signs of failure. And that's why the American people don't support this occupation anymore. They're just being practical. They know Bush's plan will not work, all except for that 28%. And militarily, Iraq has become another Somalia. And we have this administration that still supports the Iraqi president, Maliki. But Maliki is nothing more than a meaningless figurehead who will have no effect on the future of the country of Iraq. He will not. He doesn't have any popular support. Remember all this going to the polls with the purple fingers and all that? Find out where Maliki's support is now. He doesn't have any. And he doesn't support, he doesn't control really a damn thing beyond the walls of the Green Zone. This Maliki government is now and always was nothing more than some sort of a facade that was designed to convince the American people that political process is being progress is being made in Iraq. But there is no progress. It's a sham. Am I saying that Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker were misleading us? Yes. There is no progress. The future of that country is in the hands of the men with the guns. They're the ones who have divided Iraq into these little locally controlled fiefdoms. And they're the ones who are going to ultimately decide who's going to rule the state. We've got all the news organizations now calling the fighting between these groups sectarian warfare. But that term is misleading. That fighting is political in nature. And they aren't fighting to see who's going to have the most powerful religious sect in that country. They're fighting to see who's going to fill the shoes of Saddam Hussein, who's going to fill that vacuum that was left by him. It's a power struggle. And we've got this American media of ours trying to portray this conflict as some kind of a clash between a bunch of half-crazed Arabs, dead-enders and terrorists, as Donald Rumsfeld would call them. People who relish the idea of killing their countrymen. But that's just a way of demonizing these people. The violence that's going on there is completely rational. It's the inevitable reaction to the dissolution of the state and the occupation by foreign troops. Who would think this wouldn't have happened? Many people predicted this exact thing would happen. Many military experts predicted that there would be outbreaks of fighting after our invasion, after our occupation. But, of course, the Bush administration shrugged off all their warnings. And the media was out there being a bunch of cheerleaders at the time. And now we've got terrible violence again that's flared up in Basra and Baghdad and many places around the country. And there's no end of it in sight. And there's one thing that is certain about Iraq's future, and that it is will not be decided at the ballot box. George Bush has made sure of that. For anybody that has any illusions over this, the United States military doesn't rule Iraq, nor does it have the power to control the events on the ground. It's just one of many militias, probably the most powerful one, that are trying to get power. Power in the country that's ruled by warlords. If Bush thinks that our military is so all-powerful that can take control of this country, after the Army conducts combat operations, where do they go? They have to retreat back to their camps and bases. There's no future for this occupation. None. We do not have the manpower to hold territory or to establish security in Iraq. We don't have enough people. And the fact is, the presence of American troops incites a whole lot more violence because they're seen as occupiers rather than liberators. Oh yes, remember how we're liberators. That's not how we're seen at all. Not at all. Let's head on over to the phones. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, Guy, how you doing?
Good.
I'm listening off and on. I haven't had much of a chance to sit down and pay too much attention, but I don't know. You know, you started off talking about the religion thing, the Pope visiting the country and so forth. And it always gets me a little upset when, not with you, when we have so much attention being paid to things that are patently silly. I mean, the meeting between Bush and the Pope.
Yeah, what's the point?
My point is that, you know...
No, not your point. What's Bush's point in having this meeting? I don't get it.
Well, PR more than anything else, I would
imagine. Sure, for both of them.
But... Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But the Pope, you know, he's the leader of the Catholic Church and all that. I mean, I have no faith, nothing, zero. Well, I shouldn't quite say that. But if you stop and analyze it, all these religions are really, they're amazing. You know, I'm talking about organized religions, because I really believe that as human beings, we all share some kind of religious an intrinsic religious feeling, whatever. I mean, it's really tough to get out there at night and look at the stars and say, man, there's nothing. That's crazy. There's something. However, you know, I heard an interview with Richard Dawkins. He's the one who wrote The God Delusion. He was fascinating. He said that atheists come in seven different varieties. It's not like a sliding scale from one to seven. And the seventh one is a person who believes absolutely nothing. I mean, zero, nada, zilch. So then he was asked, well, how about you? I said, well, I'm right around a six. he said, most scientists throughout the world have a pretty good grip on reality. They're not BS by this organized religion stuff. They're at a six. And the way he explained it was that a six is someone who doesn't really believe in any kind of a personal God, because that's silly. But a person who believes there's something beyond this. You know, there is a religious component to our nature, but there's something that's hardwired, that's built in. And I was fascinated by that. He went on and on. I've got to pick his book up and read that thing. I'm struggling with Christopher Hitchens' book right now. But he's quoting the Bible all over the place.
Christopher Hitchens. You're reading that.
Well, I'm trying to read it, guy. I'm not exactly reading it.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't like it. A lot of the stuff makes a lot of sense, at least the stuff that I understand, but there's so much in it. He gets into particulars and details and so forth, and I just can't quite follow it. I went through Sam Harris's book. Richard Harris is a movie star. I went through Sam Harris's book, and The End of Faith. That was excellent. There are a few chapters there that were tough to read. But I think a lot of people have come out of the closet these days. You know, they always didn't really believe in a whole hell of a lot, but now they're not quite afraid to speak their mind.
Well, it's heading the other way in this country. There's no question.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we're probably following an evolution the way Europe did. I mean, in Europe back in the 13th, 14th centuries, 15th century, I mean, they killed each other over this stuff.
Sure.
And they learned the hard way. I think France is one of the most Christian nations in the world as far as population belonging to a church or whatever. But when you ask Frenchmen whether or not they go to church, you find a tremendous number. They don't bother with it.
Mm.
They also have the highest percentage of atheists. And they've learned the hard way. We haven't learned that. We don't practice what we preach in this country.
Oh, no, we do not. And I think the Scandinavian countries are pretty close to them as well.
Oh, yeah. No, they're very good. They're very good. I've got a cousin who, way back in Vietnam, he just bailed out. He just said, the hell with us. He left. And he went to Sweden. Well, he never came back. I haven't talked to him for I don't know how many years, but the last time I talked to him, he was very, very happy. He said that hypocrisy really does not exist in Sweden. You pay a hell of a price for your for whatever you get, and you get a phenomenal amount. They have the cradle to the grave type socialism,
mm-hmm.
And you're paying for it. You're paying for it, but at least you get it from this country. We pay with your zero for it. But it's a tough. I don't know.
We had an expat call from Sweden not long ago.
Really?
I wonder if it's your cousin. He was telling us the very same thing. He'd been there for a good long time, too. And it was interesting to talk to him. That's been, maybe a month ago or maybe longer. You know how time goes these days.
Yeah, Sweden is probably one of the few countries where you'd be safe traveling as an American.
Yeah.
These days, almost everywhere else, you know, you're an idiot because you're an American. Just like those... Well, the women of the bridge team, they were questioned, the American women on the international bridge team, because they were questioned about George Bush and so forth. I guess they were disgusted being asked constantly. They held up a sign.
Yeah.
Said, we didn't vote for the guy.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. I do, yeah.
Yeah, that was fascinating. Americans we're running around now with bullseyes on it. You know, we don't know which end is up. It's really sad, you know, because it's almost as if there's a lot of people in that population who understand what's going on. And they're yelling and screaming it out, but, you know, it's as if nobody cares. And there are a lot of people who understand what's going on, but they really don't care. You know, I'm talking about Congress and the president and those characters. They know. They're no dummies.
Sure.
Like the elite in the ancient Greek society, they acknowledged the gods. They really didn't believe that stuff, but for the masses, there was no problem, you know,
sure,
acknowledging it publicly. So these people know what's going on. They just don't care. And they've gotten away with it for so long. It's now blatant in your face. It's pathetic. And then we have the 20% of the population. What is it? 20, anywhere from 20 to 30% of the population. It fluctuates up and down. They just don't get it. They think everything's hunky-dory, you know.
Yeah, that's fine. It's not knocking. The wolf's not at my door. I haven't lost anybody in war. Therefore, everything is hunky-dory in this country. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're an amazing group. I have a couple friends of mine that way. I went to dinner the other night with two of them, and we had a talk about going fishing, or things we did when we were children. But we were there for 3 hours. We spent a long time at the restaurant. Not once did any controversy. Actually, this stuff isn't controversial. It's at the tip of everybody's tongue, or at least it should be. None of that came up. And if I brought it up, they would look at me as if I had four heads. So,
oh, sure.
I don't even bother with it.
I had somebody outright ask me not too long ago, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was talking about, I mentioned about the economy being in the toilet, and they just looked at me with a puzzled look. What are you talking about? My life is fine. I don't, you know, you people on the left, you just are trying to make things, evidently he hasn't read that all the stock market, the stock market's fine, but I guess he hasn't read that there's so many other problems. Merrill Lynch and all these big companies out searching for more money on Wall Street and all. It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, it's sad. You know, the people with Merrill Lynch, they just recycle themselves into another job. It's just like the Bear Stearns thing. It's weird. And our people, there's sort of a tremendous lacking in empathy in our society. I just don't understand it.
Well, there is.
For example, the other day I heard something about, there are these food riots going on all over the world, especially in West Africa. People, they're dying of starvation, so they're doing anything and everything to get some food. And the United States is going to send, I think it's $200 million. Well, now, $200 million, then I didn't have a calculator. I tried to do something fast in my head. We're whizzing away $12 billion
right
back. And $200 million, something like, 50 times, some outrageous thing. In other words, for a mere pittance of that $12 billion, we could probably feed everybody in West Africa. But if you try to bounce it off some of these people on the far right, I mean the loony fringe, they look at you again as if you have four heads.
Well, if I got it figured right, that comes out to about half a day of the war.
Is that what it is?
Half a day.
Yeah.
Let's say 200 million a half a day, it'd be 400 million a day times 30 days, it'd be 12 billion a month. So half a day of the war, 12 hours of the war, we could take care of that food problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, I don't understand. And, I'm a citizen of this country. I love my country. I have nothing to discuss with my government, but I love the country. And, the first time Bush was elected, everybody said, all right, it was an anomaly. The Supreme Court screwed up. They gave it to blah, 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 so forth and so on. But the world generally didn't hold Americans responsible. This this time, oh, no.
Got nowhere to hide this time.
That's a good way to put it. This time, nowhere to hide.
We have many, where I live here in Southwest Florida, we have many, many people here that visiting from other countries, and they are just befuddled, just totally amazed that we elected that man a second time. Of course, I am, too.
I'm not so sure he really was elected a second time anyway. There was the Ohio debacle and
yes,
a few other things. So, who knows? Who was it that said it's not the... it's who counts the vote that counts, not the vote itself. So.
I voted early the last election, and I was on a cruise ship when the news came in about the junior getting elected. And imagine this, I was on a cruise ship, and I couldn't eat.
Hey, I said I was in Southwest Florida. I voted down there that last election. And before I actually voted, I sent for a absentee ballot. My wife said, well, at least this way we get a piece of paper. Well, I got this absentee ballot. It came from Lee County, whatever.
That's where I am.
Right, exactly. The absentee ballot looked like, maybe the fifth generation of a bad photocopy. And I could barely read it. So we looked at each other, and we sat down, we filled them out, and then she looked at me and said, do you think they're going to count these? I said, no. They're going to go into the nearest, file 13. And anyway, the rest is history.
Yeah.
But I just thought I'd call and just tell you, you have a marvelous program, guys. You've got
thank you. Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm from the San Francisco of the Northeast, Boston.
Okay. All right.
I love my city.
All right. Yeah, the Bostonians do. People are very loyal to their city. I know quite a few Bostonians, and we get many of them visiting here every year. Of course, we've got the Red Sox here in town for spring training.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so we get to talk to lots of people from Beantown. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it very much.
Well, yeah, thank you for your program.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
We'll try.
Bye.
Say, I've got some bad news to report. Oh, I've got some bad news. This is bad news for Rush Limbaugh. Bad news for Rush Limbaugh. The Walgreens Pharmacy Company is going to stop handling OxyContin. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. Walgreens, no more OxyContin. Now, I don't know. You know, maybe I'm not being fair here. Maybe Rush is, maybe he's clean now. I don't know. He might be, but just in case he isn't, things are going to get tough. Of course, I imagine you make $35 million a year, you can buy all the drugs you want anyway, anywhere you want. But then again, he did have to send his mate out to the Denny's parking lot to get him, so maybe it's not all that easy. But, boy, you know it's true, isn't it? And no matter how rich you are, you're still vulnerable to somebody going out and talking about you. Who was it, the National Enquirer that exposed that whole thing? Russia's terrible, uncontrolled drug addiction that cost him his hearing and about half of his sanity. At least half of it. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. We will be back in a minute. Don't go away.
Hey there, Rangers. When you mosey into Rick's place, you never know what you're going to get.
I had a conversation with one of my right-wing Democrat friends. One thing this person told me was that I'm mean, so I'm going to try to change.
Oh, Rick, you're not mean. You're just passionate in a very spirited sort of way.
I've done it. I went through an entire show without one single insult.
Rick, we know better.
Mr. and Mrs. Republican, you are no good. You are a lying fool. You're a lying fool, of crook, a crooky crook, a babbling moron, juggling the truth. A goon, a nick and pick and whiny rat. An Uncle Sam can't do anything right. And when it comes to sex, you are also uptight. Free pig, monster, and a beast. You're a killer.
Republican side!
Don't miss Rick's Place with Rick Goodner, part of the weekend lineup on the horn. Running all weekend in rotation with the Salads Report and Night Sounds.
They suck like crazy, but not in a good way.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
It's cool, man.
Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have you along with us today. Say, I wonder how many of you, and I haven't had a chance over the past week or two until early this morning, to read the details of that NATO meeting that took place a couple weeks ago. It was right around April Fool's Day. I didn't get a chance to read all the details about that until today, and I knew the gist of it, but it's really fascinating. Probably the one of the most bizarre meetings NATO ever held, and the military alliance decided that they would approve a U.S. plan to build an anti-missile system in Poland and the Czech Republic, and against a threat that really doesn't exist. And I'm sure you've heard about this. Yes, the U.S. wants to build an anti-missile system in Poland and the Czech Republic. And it's supposedly been designed to shoot down long-range Iranian missiles with nuclear warheads. The thing is, Iran doesn't have long-range missiles, and it doesn't have nuclear warheads. And beyond that, what reason does Iran have to shoot long-range missiles with nuclear warheads at Western Europe? None that we know of. Do you know of anything? Somebody want to tell me the reasoning behind that? Is there any reasoning behind that except to placate the military-industrial complex with the millions, tens of millions of more dollars of your tax money? None that I can say. And then, you know, Bush's new good friend, Sarkozy, the new president of France who supposedly loves America, he has agreed to send 700 soldiers to Afghanistan to help fight the Taliban. 700. How about that? That's really a big gesture, isn't it? The American army isn't near what it needs to be in Afghanistan. And there's a huge public opposition in France against sending people there, and yet Sarkozy sent 700 soldiers. I mean, everybody knows that oil in France does understand that oil's the reason for that war. And they've got their right-wingers there, too, and they're saying, well, it's symbolic. That's the reason for doing it. Seems Sarkozy's got himself an ideological soulmate in Bush. You know, I wonder if Bush looked in his soul yet. But 700 soldiers. We've got 80,000, us and NATO, 80,000 troops there. The Soviets tried for how many years? 20 years? To beat the Pashtun tribes with about 160,000 Red Army troops. So we've got 700 Frenchmen now, a few thousand U.S. Marines, and 2,500 Canadian troops, and they think they're going to somehow do the job there. Not going to happen. Never going to happen in that country. Well, I don't know.
It's all started because of Osama bin Laden,
and there he is, as far as we know, still running around. Wonder how many years will we be at war in the Middle East? How many do you think? We had John McCain saying it's okay with him with their 100 years, and he can parse that all he wants to now, but he did say that. He said, and he came out and recently said, well, what I meant was, it's okay if we have soldiers there for 100 years as long as none of them are getting killed. The fact is, we will never control Iraq. Not in 2 years, 4 years, 10 years, not in 20 years. The Iraqis hate us. And maybe rightly so. And if Bush thinks he's going to change the mind of millions of Iraqis who've lost loved ones in the war, of Iraqis that have had to move out of the country, he's wasting his time. This campaign of winning their hearts and minds in Iraq, that's over with. That's lost. That's long ago lost. We'll never be welcome in Iraq. You can build all the big embassies you want, the biggest embassy in the world, all that. We'll never be welcome there. I'd feel better. I don't know about you, but I'd feel better if Bush had just come on TV and say, you know what? I got an admission to make. The reason we're in Iraq is because of their oil. I never really went there for any other reason. I'd feel better if he'd just come out and tell us that. But the Iraqi people, the suffering that they've had, the British medical journal, Lancet, says that more than 1 million Iraqis have been killed in the war. Another 4 million have been displaced or fled the country. But those figures don't tell us anything about the magnitude of the disaster that Bush has created by attacking Iraq and keeping this occupation going. For the Iraqis, it's the worst catastrophe, and for that whole area, it's the worst catastrophe in the Middle East since 1948. And living standards have declined almost for everybody in almost every area. Infant mortality, clean water, food security, medical supplies, education, electrical power, employment, even their oil production is still below the pre-war levels. And this invasion has been the biggest policy blunder of the United States since Vietnam. Everything has gone wrong. And the center of the world, the Middle East, is in chaos. And the suffering in that country is far more than Americans realize. It most certainly is. I ran across this quote from retired Lieutenant General William Odom, and you all know who he is. He commented on this point in an interview with Jim Lehrer on the Jim Lehrer NewsHour. This is a general that knows the story there, and let me quote him. He said, "The surge has sustained military instability and achieved nothing in political consolidation. Things are much worse now. And I don't see them getting any better. This was foreseeable a year and a half ago. And to continue to put the cozy veneer of comfortable half-truths on this is to deceive the American public and make them think it is not the charade it is. When you say that the Lebanization of Iraq is taking place, yes, but not because of Iran, but because the U.S. went in and made this kind of fragmentation possible. And it has occurred over the last 5 years. The al-Maliki government is worse off now. The notion that there's some kind of progress is absurd. The al-Maliki government uses its Ministry of Interior like a death squad militia. So to call Sadr an extremist and Maliki a good guy just overlooks the reality that there are no good guys. The war in Iraq was lost before the first shot was fired. The conflict never had the complete support of the American people, and Iraq never posed a threat to U.S. national security. And the sooner that this country faces up to the fact that the whole rationale for this war was based on lies, it was a coup that was orchestrated by the elites and the media to carry out a far-right agenda, the better off we'll be. This mission has failed, but no one wants to admit their mistakes by pulling out. So this butchery is going to continue on with no end in sight. And we've had Osama bin Laden tell us how he wants this to turn out, and it seems like that we're on that path. This Bush administration has decided to pursue a strategy that is absolutely unprecedented in American history. It's decided to continue to prosecute a war that's has already been lost morally, strategically, and militarily. But we have to face up to the fact that fighting a losing war has its cost. And America is a whole lot weaker now than it was when Bush took office in 2000. The army's stretched to the breaking point, and U.S. prestige has never been lower. And still, the troops probably won't be withdrawn until all the other options have been exhausted. And that could turn out to be a very serious miscalculation. Because we've got deteriorating economic conditions in the financial markets. That's putting tremendous pressure on the dollar. The corporate bond and equity markets are in complete disarray. The banking system is collapsing. Consumer spending's down. Tax revenues are falling. And the country is headed into a deep and wide recession, or worse. And I think the U.S. will leave Iraq sooner than a lot of the people in the media believe, but it will not be at a time of our choosing. More likely, this occupation will end when the United States no longer has the capacity to occupy Iraq. That is when the Chinese and the oil-producing countries, the Gulf states, stop financing our enormous current deficit. And when the funding stops, the bloodshed will end. And I do believe that the Iraq war, the Iraq occupation, signals the end of U.S. interventionism for at least a generation or more, that Americans won't forget this for a long, long time, and the sting of withdrawing won't be quickly forgotten, just like it wasn't going out of Vietnam. This ideological pillar upon which this war was built, the regime change, has been exposed as a fraud, and it was all along, it was a baseless justification for unprovoked aggression. Someone's going to have to be held accountable. Would that there could be some tribunals to determine who's responsible for the deaths of over 1 million Iraqis. But I doubt we ever see that happen. It should happen. But it won't. We'll be back right after this.
It's the time of the season when the love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands. Take you and the sun to promised land, to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for loving. What's your name?
What's your name?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy's name?
Is it rich like me? Has it taken any time to show you what you need to live? To take you and the sun to promised lands, to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for
your name?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Is he rich
Hey, you still got time to give us a call, 866-546-5254. It won't be a long conversation. Anyway, glad to have you back here on the Guy James Show, coming to you live from beautiful Southwest Florida today. I do want everybody to remain to remember. I've spoken a good bit today about the war. And, yes, the economy is terrible and getting worse. But the war is also a terrible problem, if not right at the top of our problems, probably causing many of our economic problems. We should all remember that, yes, George Bush will be leaving office, but yes, there's another man waiting to take his place that will continue on with his policies. There is little question that John McCain will carry right on the status quo of Junior Bush. And stop and think about some of the things he said. He said very, very recently that he believes success is within reach in Iraq. Does he even know what success in Iraq is? Has he even defined what success in Iraq is? And the fact is, he is not. And he mentioned that there's good reason to talk with real hope and optimism about Iraq's future. You have to wonder. You have to wonder whether this 71 or 72-year-old man, whatever he is, if he doesn't believe in the tooth fairy still. He's talking about hope and optimism in Iraq. But 50 or 60 more people being slaughtered today. Same thing yesterday or the day before. We've had mass defections from the Iraqi army. Our training hasn't done all that much good, we're finding. We heard from General Odom saying that it's not possible. So we do have to remember that this man, this John McCain, he's all for keeping this thing going and finding success, whatever that is, in the warped ideology of the people on the right. John McCain has been wrong from day one on the Iraq occupation. His reputation is built on his opposition to torture, and yet he voted against a bill to ban waterboarding. I should tell you right there what kind of a man you're dealing with. He is not a man that you'd want to take a chance on putting in the Oval Office, most certainly not. I do want to take a moment to thank all of you who send in contributions to the program. It is important that we get those to keep the program going. We do have expenses with this program. And I just want to take a moment and say I know it's very difficult right now. I know the economy is bad. I know the political campaigns are asking for money, no matter where you live, your local congressman or senator and the presidential campaign and the various political organizations are all out there pleading for money right now, and we try not to mention it any more than we have to, but it is something that's important to keep the program going, and I hope you will consider heading on over to theguyjamesshow.com and sending a contribution into the show. We most certainly would appreciate it, and we hope to keep bringing you good internet radio for as long as possible. Thanks so much for joining us here on The Guy James Show today. Don't forget to head over to the blog, theguyjamesshow.com/blog. We'd love to get a response from you on there. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. There's a lot going on in the news this week, and I've been focusing on some of my really incredible guests that I've had both last week and this week, so I haven't had a chance just to sit and talk with you about the various news of the week. Before we get to that, I do want to tell you about what's coming up this week, because, yes, I've got another string of terrific guests for you, and I want to brag about it and also encourage you to tune in the rest of the week. Tomorrow night, we're going to go over taxes. After all, it is April 15th. It is a time when Americans are always thinking about taxes, and I'll be arguing with a conservative again. This time, Catherine Rasmussen of the National Taxpayers Union, and we'll talk about all kinds of taxes. So as you finish up your returns tomorrow, you might want to tune into that program. And then Wednesday's really the highlight of the week. Wednesday's the thing I'll be bragging about for some time to come. Colonel Larry Wilkerson, the chief of staff to Colin Powell when he was Secretary of State. That's right. The colonel who has spoken out most vociferously against the war in Iraq. The person who was in there in the early years when they made all these decisions. This guy was in the room. This guy was skeptical then. Frankly, I think Colin Powell was fairly skeptical. I still have some criticism for the man for staying in and trying to fix it instead of coming out and telling us all that was going wrong. But at least compared to the rest of the administration, which is not saying much, Colin Powell is a man with principles. In any case, Larry Wilkerson, Colonel Wilkerson, will be coming on the show Wednesday. Truly, truly a special honor to talk with me, to talk with you about the early decisions of the Iraq War, what went right, if anything, what went wrong, where we made the wrong decisions, and what he thinks of General Petraeus today. And I want to talk with you today about General Petraeus and his strategy for doing nothing in Iraq. We'll get to that. And then Thursday, I've got members of Congress, two Democratic congressmen who will talk about the Democratic response. You want a chance to take on a Democratic member of Congress, to tell them why, ask them why they're not doing enough to stop the war, and that'll be your chance on Thursday. So got a lot of good shows in the pipe for you, and I want you to check those out. This week, there's, of course, the one of the things I guess that most drew my eye was the polygamous compact.